Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Anita Javodin-Byerly. Anita Javodin-Byerly is the author of a chapbook, Digging a Hole to China, published in 2001. Her work has appeared in journals such as 5 AM, The Ledge, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Pittsburgh Quarterly, The Loyal Hannah Review, Earth's Daughters, and in the 1999 and 2000 Sandberg Livesay anthologies. You can also find her work online at poetrymagazine.com and poetrypoetry.net. Honors include awards from In Pittsburgh News Weekly, Negative Capability Eve of St. Agnes Award, YOP, and the Westmoreland Arts and Heritage Festival. In 2004, she was nominated for the Mary Roberts Reinhardt Award in Poetry. And she is a resident of Pittsburgh, and her new book was just released. It's entitled October Light, and it's published by Finishing Line Press. So welcome, Anita. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. So you're going to start with poems from your new book.
Yes, I would like to do that.
Okay.
I'd like to start with the poem Second Sight. It kind of sets the theme for the chapbook, and so I'd like to read that first. Second Sight. It begins with an epigraph by the poet Carol Vandeveer Hamilton from her poem Blind Sight. Like fallen angels, we run through blindness. Suddenly, sun flashes through clouds that have covered my tiny part of the planet for the past 6 days. And my eyes, recovering from surgery, cannot take the brilliant light. I am blinded and shield them with my hand until they adjust, as they do at night when objects gradually take shape from darkness. This fallacy in sight, how we glimpse only a slice of the scene, fill in the rest with what already dwells in our minds. Surmise we know truth from a blur of indistinct images, race through life, missing that sacred vision of saint and seer. This poem is called Looking Back. The sky was clear, the other shore too far away to throw its form. Still, I saw a dark patch on the hill above the lake, and thought it blight or stand of pine among the autumn trees. But when I walked a little way, looked back, it moved, and every time I walked, then looked, it slid into a different place, as if some capricious god were playing tricks, for I could see no thing to cast the shadow, make it dart here and there along the hill. The next poems are kind of place poems. I'd like to start out with one called January Thaw. In the winter of 1996, the rivers in Pittsburgh froze. And then in January, there was a sudden thaw. And somehow it reminded me of my grandmother's funeral in 1959. January thaw. Red rose on white snow. A voiceless cardinal by grandma's grave. Where we stood, linked by blood, distance by coats, hoods, scarves, time. Down in the valley, the Monongahela slept under its cover of green ice, while the smokestacks of the Edgar Thompson coughed black phlegm into gray sky. Dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return, the priest intoned. But it was later in the car with Cousin Emma when the flood of my tears broke through. Now ice cracks the Allegheny, spilling the river over its sides, leaving Pittsburgh behind in mud, that primordial muck that in the sun dries to dust. And this is a poem also about Pittsburgh, but it's a little bit of a journey from Pittsburgh to Scotland. And it's called Trains. I have always lived near trains. They are part of my life, a backdrop for childhood. When I lay awake listening to the screech of wheel on rail, as trains coupled and uncoupled at the siding a block away. I rode the train back and forth to my first job in Pittsburgh. In winter, the coaches smelled like cigars and dust. The red upholstered seats were soiled with soot and grease. The windows always steamed, and I would rub a small eye on the pane with my glove so I could watch each station pass by, its signs swinging in the wind, Raup, East Liberty, Homewood, Swissvale, Copeland. Now I am alone, a stranger on the train from London to Edinburgh. I watch flocks of sheep grazing on cliffs above a gray sea that pounds black sand and rocks. The brooding sky breaks into intense rain, obscuring my view, leaving me only the wail of the whistle.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Anita Javodan Byerly. And she's reading from her new book, published by Finishing Light, entitled October Light. You know, I love, Anita, how you evoke all kinds of images in your poems and how you do a lot of naming with, you know, the train poem that you just read, you know, East Liberty, Swissvale, and invariably it seems like the steel mills show up in your poems sooner or later, which I think is terrific. Can you talk about, though, that choice as a writer to include the landscape of your city, you know, in your poems? I know there's some people talk about putting regional influences and regional details in. Can you talk about that choice a little bit?
Well, I think one of the duties of the poet is to really pay attention to your surroundings. And growing up and living in Pittsburgh all my life, I've had an opportunity certainly to be aware of all the different surroundings and the different influences that the background here in Pittsburgh gives us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like how it's just interwoven in all your poems. Not in every poem, but sooner or later it shows up in a really great way. I want to congratulate you on your new book.
Thank you.
From Finishing Line Press. And, you know, as you know, there are a lot of people out there trying to get books published, and I know you've been working on this one for a while. Could you talk about the process maybe of putting this book together and getting it published and how that went for you?
Yes, it is work.
Yeah, it sure is, isn't it?
Advise anybody who's thinking about doing it that it is work. And a chapbook usually has to have a unifying theme. And I was trying to find that theme, and I noticed that a lot of my poems had to do with sight or perception. So I gathered those together, the poems, and of course I took some out and put some new ones in, and that is a process that we all go through. And then I started to send it out to contests, chapbook contests. And so, of course, I got all my rejections.
Do you have a box at home for your rejections like I
yes.
do?
Yeah. So, but I did send to the Finishing Line Press contest last year in 07. And I didn't win the contest, but they did like the chapbook and notified me that they'd like to publish it. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That was very exciting.
Yeah, that's great. One thing that I like about Finishing Line is that they publish a lot of books, and they have a contest for women writers, and which that's the one that I entered.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's such a nice thing when a press will say, you didn't win, but we love this so much, we're going to publish it. So that's a great benefit. Okay. Well, could you read some more poems?
Sure.
Okay.
Kind of still in this traveling vein, I did have an opportunity probably about 10 years ago to visit Paris. And this poem is about that visit. On seeing the Venus de Milo at the Louvre, you lean slightly forward, one knee bent, a little off balance without your arms. Aphrodite, did you reach to greet a lover or lift an apple to those perfect lips? Perhaps you plucked a love song sweetly on a lyre, or sniffed a fragrant rose. You may have taken Cupid by the arm, dried a tear from his round face. I wonder if you held your looking glass to check no hair was out of place, or simply tried to catch the fold of fabric falling from your hips. And did that unnamed farmer who found you instead of water beneath the centuries of Milo's dirt dig another day to unearth a finely chiseled hand he hid from view and kept to softly hold against the night? This is another poem from that visit to Paris. It's called Place de la Madeleine. They are building a new metro in Place de la Madeleine. Giant cranes reach deep into the earth next to the church that looks like a Roman temple. La Madeleine, where Marichetti's marble angels lift the Magdalene to heaven. The rumble of trains escapes beneath my hotel, sounds like the grumbling of the damned, as it vies with the vacuum's hum and cheery bonjour, madame, of the round-faced chambermaid who sweeps the faded carpet spiraling from fifth to bottom floor. Outside, I am swept along by a stream of chic Parisians, flowing past the flower market, ablaze in morning light. I almost miss the gypsy woman with upturned, unwashed hand. The din of the organ grinder is drowned by the constant thunder of bulldozers. But at night, women in décolleté wait silently in Mercedes, like the glazed gourmet ducks and Napoleons in the windows of Fouchon. From Paris, coming back to Martin's Ferry, Ohio, where every year until last year they held a James Wright Poetry Festival to honor James Wright, who grew up in Martin's Ferry. Martin's Ferry is such a typical small Midwest town, and it was interesting the townspeople and the poets mixing, and just the scenes in Martin's Ferry of the Midwest town is very interesting. This poem is called Mutiny in Martin's Ferry. From dusty shelves behind dirty windows of hardware stores leap bears clad in overalls, dogs in hard hats, plaster of Paris frogs and gnomes. From fireplace mantles and curio cabinets in old parlors with drawn drapes, jump ceramic animals and cherubs. Joined by some wayward poems from the James Wright Festival, the miniatures march past the benevolent order of elks, VFW, and Winnetka Tribe 75 Improved Order of Red Men. Past Dutch Henry's Bar and the First Presbyterian Church, they parade down Hanover to the river, where they jump into the murky Ohio, sink to its muddy bottom, and observe for the first time submerged tires, broken bottles, catfish, and sludge. Some latch onto a floating branch, travel down the Mississippi to Memphis, where a young man hunting for treasure finds metaphors on the riverbank, similes floating in shallow water.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Anita Javodin-Byerly, and she's reading from her new book, October Light, just published by Finishing Line Press. Anita, I really like how you take us from place to place, you know, Paris, Martin's Ferry, back to Pittsburgh. You know, it's like a little travelogue there. But I want to ask you about your book party, which is coming up this Friday. I don't want to forget that. And you're going to be giving a reading and celebrating the release of this book. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Yes. On Friday, March 28th, there'll be a reading and book signing of October Light in the upstairs room at Art Space and Coffee House, which is also known as Make Your Mark, in Point Breeze, 6736 Reynolds Street in Pittsburgh, 15206. We'll have some wine and some cheese and maybe some cookies, and I think we'll have a good time.
Yeah.
It's free and open to the public.
Open to everybody.
Yeah.
And you're going to be reading some poems, selling books.
Right.
Right. So some of these poems will be in that book, and you'll be the only one reading, right? It'll be a book release party.
Yes.
Focusing on your book, which is great. And that's a nice coffee house, too. I've always known it as Make Your Mark, but it's actually called Art Space and Coffee House on Reynolds. All right. So that's coming up this Friday at 7:30. And I also wanted to tell people that if they want to get a, if they can't make that or something, they want to get a, if they can't wait till Friday, they need a copy of your book, they can go to Amazon.com and find it.
Right.
But getting back to the poems, I think you were going to call this book, weren't you going to call it Second Sight for a while?
Yes.
Is that right?
And then the publisher already had a book by that name.
Oh, okay.
So I had to change it. When I told someone that I had changed it to October Light, they said, well, that's actually like a metaphor for Second Sight, mm-hmm. being the season of a life. And you do have some insights that you may not have had when you were younger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that worked out really well.
Yeah, it did.
And in terms of, you talked about finding a theme, and there's lots about seeing and sight and light in this book. Did those themes just arise naturally? Like you looked at a bunch of poems and you said, oh, I'm writing about this? Or did you set out to write those poems?
No, I didn't set out to write those poems. I just found that I went through a lot of poems and I thought, these poems do have a similar theme to them.
That's nice how that just happens.
Yeah, it is.
I think people think we sit down and we say, now I'll write a book about seeing, as if you could do that.
Right.
So, but they arise anyway.
I could never work that way.
No, I couldn't either. But it's great that it arises out of our obsessions anyway. It just comes up.
Yeah.
So how about more poems?
Okay. I thought I'd read a few poems from my larger manuscript that I've started to send out. It's called Steam Rising, and this poem is from is the title poem from that book, and it also appears in the new anthology Along These Rivers of Pittsburgh Poems and Photographs. Steam Rising. It's in four parts. One, in the winter downtown, steam rises on certain street corners like geysers in Yellowstone, or as if some secret Hades existed beneath the paved streets. I know it comes from the heating system for the high office buildings, but as I hurry to work, collar turned up against the wind, I feel the mystery of steam. Like fog, it blurs the edges of time. I am saying goodnight to Jim on the porch brittle from snow. He is an ex-prisoner of war. I am 17. Earlier, his passion had frightened me, his mouth bruising, his body asking too much. Now smoke climbs silently from chimneys. Our breaths rise into the night air, separate, not mingling. What do I know about hunger? What do I know about need? Three, the engine hisses impatiently as I part from my soldier husband. Having said everything, we cling together like an apple being cut apart. I try to etch his face on my mind, afraid I won't remember it. He holds me close under his heavy army coat, and I breathe in the smell of him, a combination of shaving lotion, cigarettes, something intangible. At night, I know I will search for that scent in his pillow. Steam surrounds me. I watch, crying, while the train pulls out. Four. As I pour my mother's tea, steam rises from the old kettle. For years, we have been the odd couple, divorced daughter, widowed mother, helpmates, sparring partners. Now she is slipping a little more each day. She smooths the green and white checkered cloth, stirs the spoon methodically against the cup. Trembling, she lifts it with both hands, drinks the hot liquid. Later at bedtime, I take the steaming washcloth, wring it, hand it to her. She presses it against her face, against the parchment skin and closed, clouded eyes. She tells me how good it feels. This poem is called My Father's Language. In 2000, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, but it was still in its very early stages. But it seemed to me I had to learn this new language with all these medical and scientific terms in it. And somehow that connected to me with my father as the son of French immigrants when he started to school knowing very little English. My father's language. In the school picture, your face is as round as the letter O. Your straight black hair slicked back as if with olive oil. White collar and black tie around your scrubbed neck must have choked back the soft Mediterranean slur, the music of the syllables you'd heard from birth. Was the ordinary babble of students confusing to your unaccustomed ear? Having learned the new language, you stored the French away in a memory trunk to be opened occasionally when Aunt Elise or Grandma came to visit. Now I'm learning a new diction. Words like carcinoma, invasive, chemo, that cut like a scalpel. Heavy words like lymph nodes, tamoxifen, that catch in my throat. The way the guttural English consonants must have caught in yours that first day at Shady Park School.
Well, we're out of time, Anita, but thank you so much. It was wonderful, and really good luck with your book party this Friday, March 28th, 7:30 at Make Your Mark Art Space and Coffee House in Point Breeze.
Thank you, Jan. Okay. It's been delightful. Okay.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Sound engineers are Ben Cole, Amy Sutton, and Ziggy Edwards. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.